Welcome to a Spectator podcast special on the aftermath of Ian Duncan Smith's resignation. The former Work and Pension Secretary has just given his first interview, elaborating on his reasons for quitting.
A long-running problem where I felt really semi-detached, in a sense, isolated more often in these debates, because I'm not able to be able to convince people that what we were losing progressively, and this was my worry, was the narrative that the Conservative Party was this One Nation Party caring about those who don't even necessarily vote for it, who may never vote for it.
Meanwhile, the Pensions Minister, Ros Altman, has said her former boss is simply trying to destabilise the Prime Minister as part of the EU referendum campaign.
I honestly don't think that this is about the issue of reform. I think this is about the issue of the EU, and that he has been looking for a reason to go, and he's used this as the reason.
I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth to discuss what happens next. So, James, what did you make of the Ian Duncan Smith interview?
I think that was one of the most extraordinary political interviews of recent times. There's a bombshell charge in that, that the government is in danger of dividing society. Ian Duncan Smith said repeatedly and very pointedly that the Tory party needs to make policy with a care to those who don't and will never vote for it. Everyone in Westminster will see that as a missile aimed at George Osborne, a very political chancellor. He also made clear that it simply wasn't fair, he argued, to look for all these deficit reduction savings in the working age welfare budget, that he wants pensioner benefits unprotected and the triple lock scrapped. Again, those are things that are largely seen in Westminster as being politically motivated, designed to shore up Tory support among pensioners who vote. I mean, it was a quite astonishing interview because he basically said that this government is not fit to claim the one nation mantle that it talks about. I also think the number 10 will be, and number 11 will be furious about the interview. I think they'll also be irritated that Ian Duncan Smith wasn't asked about Europe at all, because what Ian Duncan Smith was allowed to do there, and he did very passionately, was to argue that this resignation was all about welfare policy and not at all about Europe. While as privately, Downing Street are making quite clear, and indeed David Cameron, by bringing up the subject of Europe in his reply to Ian Duncan Smith's resignation letter, are making quite clear that they think this is really about Europe, not about welfare.
And do you get the sense that the number 10 is trying to retaliate in a way, that there is an operation going on to try to return fire to Ian Duncan Smith?
I think number 10 have made a mistake, which is they should have soared above this. I mean, in David Cameron's reply to Ian Duncan Smith's resignation letter is remarkably snippy. He says he's puzzled and surprised by IDS's resignation. I think Cameron would be much better off striking a tone of congratulating Ian Duncan Smith on what they've all achieved together and trying to be a unifying force. I think that, you know, it's turned into a bar fight, and it is undignified for the Prime Minister to be involved in a bar fight, especially with someone who is a former leader and was one of his ministers until recently. Now, those close to Cameron claim that you're holding them to different standards. Why should IDS be allowed to attack them in these very personal terms, very political terms, and they not be allowed to fire back? But I think if the Tory party is to hold together, it needs a period of calm. I was struck yesterday by several very loyal, in-supporting cabinet ministers who said to me, we just need a bit of breathing space now. We cannot deal with Cameron going out and doing Europe again. We cannot deal with the temperature being turned up. And that does bring to mind that extraordinary Ros Altman statement that you mentioned in the introduction last night. I mean, if the number 10 genuinely didn't know that she was going to say that, they should sack her for making that unauthorised statement, because I think that that has just turned the heat up. I mean, that is turning this civil war even bloodier than before.
It did look as if it was prepared. I mean, she says nothing for 24 hours, so it can't be a kind of gut reaction. And then she releases
a series... Yes, I think if there had been a series of tweets at 10:30 p.m. on Friday night, you could have thought that it was in the heat of the moment. It does seem a bit weird to wait 24 hours and then fire off an emotional reaction.
And Ros Altman, of course, is a great pensioners champion, and she'll have worked out that Ian Duncan Smith was actually gunning for the whole notion of protection of pensioners' benefits. She doesn't want that discussion to be open, does she?
Yeah, I mean, the main argument, the main policy argument that IDS was advancing on Marr was that you simply cannot get all of these savings out of the working age for welfare budget. You've got to look at pensioner benefits. He said he doesn't support the triple lock anymore. You know, he is arguing that, you know, that pensioners have suffered relatively little under austerity, and that with inflation so low, you know, you should be looking for savings there rather than going back to the working age welfare budget again and again.
Now, this has actually turned out to be rather good for Jeremy Corbyn, hasn't it? Because his attack on the budget turned out to be exactly the line that led to Ian Duncan-Smith's resignation. So all of a sudden, he doesn't look so completely hopeless. In fact, Labour's actually ahead in the polls right now.
But for Labour, this is a complete gift. You know, Labour will be able to say that this is a government so right-wing that even Ian Duncan-Smith can't support it. Every time the government does something controversial, they will be able to, if they are clever, more in sorrow than in anger, warn that the government is dividing society, as IDS said that they were at risk of doing. You know, a competent opposition should be able to make complete and utter hay with this.
So do you get the impression that Tory wars have already started and that they're capable of spinning out of control in a way that might be to the detriment of Ian Duncan-Smith and David Cameron and everybody in the Conservative Party?
Yeah, the public do not like divided parties. I mean, if you talk to the pollsters, the reason they think that Labour have drawn ahead is that Tory divisions have been centre stage in recent weeks because of Europe. I mean, there is a danger that things could spiral out of control, because what you've got going on is not just an incredibly divisive referendum campaign that is pitting roughly half the Tory party parliamentary party against the other half of the Tory parliamentary party. But this is completely entwined, inextricably linked now with the next Tory leadership race, with who is going to become the next prime minister. And I think it is going to get vicious and bitter and nasty. And I think that part of the problem is that because David Cameron is so convinced that his referendum is on a knife edge, he isn't pulling any punches. He is swinging hard at the out campaign. And that is exacerbating these Tory tensions, because normally in an election campaign, there are always exaggerations and the like. But people can kind of accept them on the grounds that politics is tribal and they understand it might be what's necessary to win. But because this referendum is pitting Tory against Tory, Tories see David Cameron stretching things in making a claim, and they become incandescent with rage. On the other side, those close to Cameron look at Boris Johnson kind of blithely advocating a particular model of EU membership and are enraged by that and think he's doing that to advance his own career rather than out of principle. It has all got very personal very quickly.
James, thank you very much.